Campus FM presents a lecture organized by the Malta Historical Society, entitled The Knights Building Regulations of Valletta. This lecture is delivered by architect Michael Allul.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the 28th of March, 1566, in this very place where we are gathered this evening, 441 years ago, almost to the day, the Grand Master of the Order of St. John, Jean de Valette, was presiding with justifiable pride over the unique and impressive ceremony of the laying of the first stone of the city of Valletta. De Valette and his knights, and the crowd of Maltese from Birgu and outlying villages, were witnessing an auspicious event of major significance in Maltese history, and especially in the annals of the country's architectural history. For on that day, a citadel was born on Mount Chabarras, a symbol of the newly found glory in which Malta and the Order found themselves after the victorious outcome of the great siege of 1565. Hardly had the dust of battle settled than De Valette, now an old and tired septuagenarian, but nonetheless still full of vigor and enthusiasm, became more than ever determined to realize the Order's dream to build a city on the Chabarras Peninsula. Ever since their arrival in Malta in 1530, all successive grandmasters and their military advisors looked longingly across the water from Fort St. Angelo, where they lived, and saw in their mind's eyes a city and a citadel, sitting astride the two main harbors, the Grand Harbor and Marsamshet. Its guns would guard the entrance of both harbors. Forts St. Elmo, St. Angelo, and St. Michael would be rendered safe from attacks from the sea, and it would provide within its ramparts protection to its inhabitants in a protracted siege. But above all, the new city would be a living symbol of a chivalrous order whose members represented the aristocratic nobility of Europe of the time, and a display and an ostentation of an amalgam of fortified walls and noble buildings. Realizing the huge expense and the lack of suitable resources in expertise, men, and materials for this mammoth task, De Valette sent envoys to the Pope, the King of France, and Philip II of Spain, and to other princes in Europe, requesting urgent financial and expert technical assistance. He especially asked Pius IV for the services of an architect and military engineer proficient in town planning and the building of fortifications. In response to this request, the Pope sent to Malta Francesco Laparelli da Cortona, with specific instructions to assist the order in the building of a new fortified city for the defense of Malta. Laparelli was born in Cortona in Tuscany in 1521 and, at an early age, became proficient in the art of fortification. He designed and constructed a new fortress in his native town and the campanile of the Duomo of Cortona. In about 1556, Laparelli left for Rome and was soon engaged by Pius IV in strengthening of the fortifications of Rome, mainly in the Roman Borgo and Castel Sant'Angelo, and the port defenses in Civitavecchia. He also had the honor of being chosen by Michelangelo himself as one of his assistants in the building of the Dome of St. Peter's. The Codex Laparelli contains a strongly worded reply written by Laparelli himself, in which he defends Michelangelo's critics who had doubted the stability of the cupola. Laparelli arrived in Malta on the 28th of September 1566. His brief from the Grand Master was an exacting one. I quote, "After prudent and mature consideration, you shall make known to us your advice on the defense of the island, and you shall explain how and where this could be achieved in the shortest possible time and with the minimum of materials." Laparelli lost no time and immediately started leveling, measuring, and designing all those places, studying the hardness and quality of the rock, and looking for the most convenient place to start the work. After only 5 days, he presented his first preliminary report to the Grand Master. This was followed by numerous altercations and endless arguments with the order's military advisors, mostly about the extent of the city. Laparelli, after different proposals, finally announced his plans for the street pattern of the city, that is, a principal street from the city entrance to the newly constructed Fort St. Elmo, with parallel streets each side and others at right angles to them, thus achieving the orthogonal or gridiron pattern of Valletta as we know it today. Laparelli wrote an eyewitness account of the opening ceremony of the laying of the first stone of Valletta, at which he was naturally the most honored guest in the whole assembly. A solemn mass of the Holy Spirit was sung under a large pavilion erected close to the chapel dedicated to Our Lady of Victories, where we are sitting today, said have been designed by Cassar and the first building to be constructed in Valletta. In 1752, this church was remodeled and enlarged to its present proportions. High Mass was followed by a sermon in Italian by an Augustinian friar. A procession was then formed, which proceeded to the site of the main gate of the city, which was named Porta San Giorgio, and then to the four counter guards, which were given the names of St. Peter and St. Paul, St. James, St. John, and St. Michael. Laparelli fails to mention in his account the exact spot where the stone was laid, but only states that after the blessing of the counter guard of St. Michael, one came to the spot which had been prepared for the location of the stone. The historiographer Bosio indicates the exact spot as being close to the angular front of St. John's counter guard, but further states that there are some who maintain that the first stone was laid on the site of Porta San Giorgio, that is, City Gate. Laparelli concludes his account with a purely personal note. I quote, "The most illustrious grandmaster presented me with a golden chain to the value of 300 golden scudi, which he placed around my neck." While the first stone of the new city was being laid in 1566, the knights were still living in Birgu, and it was only in 1571 that they started moving into Valletta. For over 40 years, the Hospitallers lived in Birgu in small houses, which they had purchased from local landowners and which they repaired, restored, and remodeled. Notable buildings, some of which still survive to this day, were the eight burges or inns of the different lands, including that of England, which could not be erected in Valletta after the English land suppression by King Henry VIII in 1540. A number of building regulations were enacted in Birgu even before the arrival of the order. In 1518, a proclamation directed that all those who had building sites in the street that led from the Church of St. Lawrence to Bormla had to leave a passage wide enough to allow two loaded donkeys to pass each other without hindrance, and from the Church of St. Nicholas to the waterfront. Another proclamation issued in 1523 ruled that no one would be allowed to build a house on the waterfront unless the owner left a gap between every two houses for the common benefit of the town. Immediately after their arrival in Malta, the Grand Master, Liladan, set up a commission in 1530, known as the Ufficio delle Case, with the express aim of establishing a fair rent for houses and shops in Birgu and of blocking excessive rents. Grand Master de Monte, who became Grand Master after the Valette in 1568, was as keen as his predecessor to see the new city rise on Mount St. Elmo, and it is recorded that he used to go frequently from Birgu to Valletta to inspect the progress of works and to encourage the order's engineers and the construction workers to double their efforts in order to finish the work with alacrity, so as to obviate the Grand Master's discomfort in going all round the landward side of the city to enter Valletta. Laparelli opened the gate in the bastion wall close to the Valletta quay, which became known as Porta di Monte. This was replaced by Victoria Gate in 1878. The knights were obviously reluctant to leave their newly acquired comfort in Birgu and leave for a new abode where suitable accommodation was still lacking. In order to achieve his aim, the Grand Master prohibited all new development in Birgu. The building of Valletta can be roughly divided into three distinct phases. The first phase involved the building of the encircling walls and especially the reconstruction of Fort St. Telmo. Next came the establishing of the city's layout and the partitioning of the area and building plots. And lastly, construction of the principal buildings essential to the administration of the order and houses for the knights and private individuals. On the 3rd of February 1569, a commission was set up consisting of three knights, a representative of the Grand Master, and Laparelli himself, with a brief, I quote, to agree on the allocation of the different plots and to do so by public deed, after taking into consideration the qualities and nature of each such building plot, and which are to be allocated as free and unencumbered for the erection thereon of new buildings. The commission met for the first time 3 months later, when it drew up a series of rules and regulations relative to the allocation of sites in the city of Valletta. The introductory chapter stated that Valletta would be divided into two zones, one known as the Collacchio, and the other for the erection of buildings by private individuals. The Collacchio was meant to be an exclusive area of the city intended to house the official and public buildings of the order, namely the conventual church, the infirmary, the palace of the Grand Master, the treasury, the chancellery, the bakeries, the powder magazines, and other public buildings. Because of the small size of the city and its peculiar configuration, this was not possible to achieve, and the idea was eventually discarded. All that was achieved was a limited concentration of public buildings in the city center, such as the conventual church, the palace of the Grand Master, and the auberges of Provence and Auvergne. The Holy Infirmary, that is, the hospital of the order, was sited in an area close to the harbor entrance, where sailors and slaves who had been wounded in the many encounters between the galleys of the order and Turkish vessels could be landed direct from the galleys and conveyed to the hospital through a tunneled passage from the waterfront. The auberges of the lands of Aragon, Castile, Italy, and France were located close to defensive posts along the city's encircling walls, which they were assigned to defend. Grand Master de Valette had designated part of Birgu as a segregated area commencing from Fort St. Angelo to the Order's Bakery on the waterfront, onto the Church of St. Nicholas, and thence to the landward walls. In Birgu, the Collacchio was not enclosed by walls, but only by stone markers. It enclosed the 8 auberges, the hospital, and the Church of St. Lawrence. In Rhodes, the Collacchio, which was separated from the rest of the Borgo by a strong wall, included all the main conventual buildings and was designed to contain the knights who could not live outside it or leave it at certain times without permission. In Rhodes, the knights of the order lived in segregation behind the high wall, which physically and militarily isolated them from the other quarters of the city. The text of the new regulations for the building of Valletta contained 12 articles which comprehensively covered the administrative, infrastructural, architectural, and urban requirements of the new capital. The articles, or capitoli, could be divided into three distinct groups. Four were related to the good management administration of the property. Two were concerned with sanitation and hygiene, and six articles with aesthetics and good planning. The nice regulations for Valletta could be encapsulated into three golden words of good town planning: beauty, health, and convenience. There can be little doubt that beauty should stand first as its quality, as it is the quality which must run through the whole concept. Sheer beauty, however, without the sanitary requirements or of convenience to city dwellers, is a singular emptiness in city planning. The first article regulated the valuation, expropriation, transfer, and development of building sites. Already in 1566, parallel with the other commission, another commission was appointed, assisted by three local experts: Maestri Matteo Cassar, Giacomo Bonnici, and Ruggiero Zemek of Zabuge. They were given the task of identifying the owners of the various areas of land to verify the title of ownership of each building site and to determine its boundaries. All information had to be properly recorded in writing. In February of the following year, the commissioners in the Maltese Maestri were ordered by the Orders Council to draw up valuations of the various plots of land. To make the valuations known through public notices and to invite owners of such lands to appear before the commissioners in order to be informed of the value of their holdings. The area enclosed by the walls of Valletta was found to belong to many different owners, and the names of the owners and the boundaries of properties were recorded by notarial deeds. In March of 1567, plots for a value of 2 tari per square cane were put on sale to the general public. The amount thus garnered was used to pay compensation to the original owners. In order to ascertain that the funds collected would be enough to cover all obligations due to owners, the Grand Master imposed a tax of 3 tari per person of every family: the conventual church, that is the Church of St. John's, the infirmary, the palace of the Grand Masters, the auberges, the Church of St. Paul, and the churches and convents of the four religious orders were granted sites free of charge. The next article, dealing with the administration and management of the property, ruled that owners of houses erected within the collocio shall rent houses only to the members of the order, with whom the amount of rent may be negotiated without restriction. Here, we catch a glimpse of the concept of private enterprise and of the adoption of the system of unrestricted rental market value of landed property. The order, wanting to ease the burden on its finances, preferred to rent property rather than embark on the building of new houses for its members. Yet another provision of an administrative nature prohibited the transfer of land without the knowledge and specific authorization of the commission. Unauthorized transfer of property was subject to a fine equal to double the value of the property, payable by both the seller and the buyer. This regulation appears to have been made in order to avoid any speculation in both land and building. The article that followed appears to us as being both injudicious and grossly discriminatory, and as favoring the rich, the powerful, and the elite. It said that sites for building purposes shall be exclusively allocated in consideration of the official status and the financial position of the buyer. The underlying principle, however, appears to have been that to ensure that selected parts of the city would be occupied by people who can afford to erect houses of high architectural merit. The commission aimed at obtaining the best results in architectural style and appearance in the heart of the city, and to relegate buildings of an inferior quality to less important parts away from its core. The aesthetics of the new city were, of course, of paramount importance. Valletta was to be a city which symbolized the grandeur of the chivalric and chivalrous order and the epitome of Europe. To achieve the same, one particular article required that streets should remain unencumbered and that no steps or other permanent structures that may interrupt the flow of traffic could be built outside the building line. Such obstructions, if erected, shall be removed at the expense of the owners. The aesthetic consideration ran parallel with military requirements, that is, to keep the streets clear in case of the movement of troops and artillery between the various parts of the fortifications. Yet another regulation directed that no garden, or other open space, shall be permitted along the street front. Any so formed shall be removed at the expense of the owner. Here again, we have both aesthetic and military considerations. As in the previous regulation, it was rightly found by the Orders Commission that any break in the street alignment, whether it is a projecting encumbrance or a recess, would substantially detract from the beauty of the streets. Its military experts concluded that any setback from the building line would afford a hidden cover for enemy troops. This concept was enunciated by Sir Thomas More in his Utopia. I quote, "The worthiest city and of the most dignity is one of fair and gorgeous buildings, and on the street they stand together in a long row through the whole street without any partition or separation." One shudders to think what would have happened to Valletta if the streetscape would have been left to the whims of property owners and uncontrolled by legislation. And Andrea Palladio, in his The Four Books of Architecture, says, "Beauty in architecture will result from the form and correspondence of the whole with respect to the several parts, of the parts with regard to each other, and these again to the whole, that the structure may appear an entire and complete body, wherein each member agrees with the others and all necessary to compose what you intend to form." Again, on purely aesthetic considerations and for the architectural beauty of the city, owners of corner plots were obliged to include in corners of the buildings some permanent form of decorative feature. Failure to comply will entail the demolition of the house at the owner's expense. Such pilasters in the facades of the otherwise austere and generally plain early buildings of Valletta, and in some cases shrines with statues, were the only ornamental element that imparted to the building a degree of architectural merit. They effectively framed the building, afforded visual strength, and added a note of finality to their terminations. The ornamental rustications were bold and sometimes aggressive, and provided an impressive play of light and shade under the Malta sun, as may be seen in the palace of the Grand Masters, the conventual church, all the surviving auberges, the infirmary, and houses owned by private individuals all over Valletta. The only notable omission in monumental Valletta of the massive corner pilasters, ordered in 1561-69 and continued all through the period of the knights, are in the customs house and the biblioteca, both built at the close of the 18th century when the Baroque was temporarily substituted by the short-lived neoclassical. In order to ensure that new buildings would have a good architectural design and the degree of uniformity and consistency, the building regulations made it compulsory on house owners to employ a capomastro, who was to be nominated by the Ufficio delle Case. The capomastro was assisted by a pool of a numerous clausus of 12 maestri, or highly skilled master masons, and later by pariti agrimensori, known in local jargon as le malmintatnash. Failure to comply with this regulation entailed the owner to pay a fine of 50 scudi or more to the Grand Master at the Grand Master's discretion. The time taken between the commencement of works and their termination was strictly controlled by another regulation. Works shall be started within 6 months of the acquisition of the site and completed and made habitable within 1 year. Failure to respect this time frame would incur the forfeiting of both building and site. The total cost of the building had to be established beforehand and secured by a notarial deed. Failure to spend this minimum sum within a total period of 3 years would incur a penalty, the amount of which was at the discretion of the Grand Master. The reason for this strict regulation was twofold. The Grand Master was determined to transfer his seat of administration from Birgu to Valletta in the shortest time possible, and at the same time, he wanted to take advantage of the labor and materials which had become available after the completion of the fortifications. Stone for building purposes had to be extracted from the Mandaraggio or from the digging of wells and cellars. Stone brought on building sites from other sources would be confiscated. The Mandaraggio was reserved for the formation of a small artificial harbor in Massamchet, excavated in rock down to sea level to provide anchorage to a number of vessels. Work was started in about 1572, but was abandoned years later when the rock was found to be too hard. Houses were eventually built within the huge hole that was excavated along streets only a few meters wide, constituting a slum area which eventually became a breeding place for disease, especially cholera, and was only eliminated in the late 1940s. Of significant importance is the fifth bylaw, which obliged property owners to ensure that each house had a water cistern or well for the collection of rainwater from the roof as well as from the streets. Rainwater was the only source in the first 5 decades of the city's construction, and it was only in 1615 that water reached Valletta from the Busquet and Dingle Heights through the Winiacor Aqueduct. Once the water reached Valletta, it was distributed to private and public reservoirs by means of underground channels. Domestic hygiene was tentatively achieved by the second part of the same rule that made compulsory a place for the collection of foul water or cesspit in all new houses. Failure to comply with both sections of the regulations incurred a penalty of 50 scudi paid to the order's treasury. This regulation was supplemented by yet another capitolo which laid down that house owners shall provide a connection to the public sewer into which shall flow all foul and wastewater, again subject to a fine of 50 scudi by non-compliance. The public sewer referred here consisted of either stone channels or pipes of porous material which ultimately flowed into the waters of the Grand Harbor. The effluent from the three cities also poured into the Grand Harbor. The Mediterranean is practically a tideless sea, resulting in the want of rapid circulation of water, and this naturally caused large areas of the sea surface to become stagnant, with obvious danger to the health of the inhabitants and frequent occurrence of fever, cholera, and other epidemics. The situation was somewhat relieved when water from the aqueduct after 1615 was used to flush the sewer conduits, but the situation was only rectified during the British period, when in 1885 the old sewers were replaced by new ones laid on modern principles. Effluent was made now to flow into the sea at considerable distance away from the seashore. Street hygiene was another concern of the administration. A proclamation issued in 1586 prohibited the throwing of refuse in the streets of Valletta, Sengre, and Birgu, while another decree of 1724 prohibited residents from throwing dirty water and other refuse in the streets and squares of Valletta. Other decrees issued on several occasions during the 18th century condemned all those fouling the walls of the Gnathas Palace and the Conventuals of St. John to heavy fines. Other regulations were enacted all through the period of the Knights. Under Grand Master Daruan, the laws of Malta, regulations, bylaws, proclamations, and bandi were collected and codified in 1784 under the name Codice Daruan. Chapter 11 deals mainly with houses and servitudes concerning adjacent properties and strict rules for good neighborliness. Construction of new buildings was not allowed unless authorized by the building commission. All buildings shall be constructed in accordance with good use and custom and the norms of good construction methods, failing which they will be demolished by the commission. As in the first building regulations of Valletta, stairs in front of house doors projecting into the street, as well as access to underground cellars, were prohibited. All houses had to be provided with a privy connected to the street sewer. Digging of wells and quarrying of stone inside houses and in open spaces in the four cities could only be carried out if authorized by the commission. Non-observance of these regulations was penalized by heavy fines payable to the public treasury. Current police laws still retain most of the provisions of the earlier ones, including that obliging owners to have a privy connected to the main sewers and a cistern or well to be kept in good condition with capacity proportionate to the surface of the house. Some regulations concerned actual building methods. The Chapter General of the Order held in 1776 required capomastri, or architects, to ensure that all official buildings had to have the ceilings of the ground floor as vaults of not less than 4 palms thick, while owners of houses of private individuals were obliged to follow this rule in the ceilings of their cellars only. Another regulation, confirmed by several court decisions going as far back as 1638, concerns the servitude of prospectus, enjoyed by the palace of the Grand Master over nearby buildings within a determined zone, known by the legal term Alcius non tollendi. A decree by Grand Master Lascaris against an Italian knight ordered the demolition of a structure which he had constructed on the roof of his house, which was considered to obstruct the view from the palace. A decree by Grand Master Daruan was issued against Count Chanter in 1781, who had requested to raise the height of his building, located opposite the palace, on the left-hand side of the main guard by 40 courses. Other sentences by Maltese courts in 1887 and 1914 against individuals applying to raise the height of their building in the vicinity of the palace all confirmed the servitude enjoyed by the palace. The decisions of the Maltese courts in favor of the servitude were confirmed by a proclamation in 1825, which ordered that no wall or building shall be constructed, nor an existing building raised in height, if it is considered by the military authorities to be prejudicial to the defenses of the Maltese Islands, without the express permission of the government. The provisions of this proclamation, though they do not have direct reference to the palace, nevertheless confirm the thesis that the government possesses full rights to apply the principle valsis non tollendi wherever it is considered necessary. For almost 4.5 centuries, Valletta has been the administrative, residential, commercial, and cultural hub of life in Malta. Time, neglect, and the ravages of time have all taken their toll, especially in World War II, when Valletta, along with the other harbor towns, was cruelly savaged by continuous aerial bombardment for more than 2 years. Post-war reconstruction was long and painful, but the capital's architectural character and its unique urban atmosphere were generally preserved. Valletta is completely enclosed by walls, and therefore horizontal expansion and urban sprawl are not possible. The city skyline, however, is at times being threatened by the raising and height of existing buildings. Valletta, like all old European cities, is facing major conservation and environmental problems, while restoration of buildings is a painstakingly low process and extremely costly. These and other aspects of Valletta's threatened future have created a healthy public awareness and concerns for the city's continuing life. Let us all hope that the effort of government, local authorities, all decision makers, and cultural societies will all work together and succeed in handing over to future generations in an excellent form the splendid city of Valletta, which we all love. Thank you very much.
You have just listened to a lecture organized by the Malta Historical Society entitled The Knights Building Regulations of Valletta. This lecture was delivered by architect Michael Allul.